From a captive planet, 2 million light years away, came a desperate plea for help. Message from space. On the verge of extinction, the leader of the persecuted Jelusians sends his beautiful granddaughter to find the 8 legendary brave adventurers who alone can stop the annihilation.
Do you know where Emerald is? You know where Emerald is? What are you doing? No! I'm a human being from the planet Earth!
Never before has the screen erupted with more spectacle, more excitement. Message from space, where fantasies are real and reality is fantastic.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the B-Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Kautzer, and we are in the midst of an ongoing series called Star Wars-ish, where we're looking at Star Wars ripoff homages, crass cash-ins, anything that from the late 70s to the 80s all the way into the 90s and beyond, try to conjure up the feeling of Star Wars. And we're on the second half of a double feature called Deep Space Rescuisms, where we're looking at two films that came out in the late 70s that literally were right on the heels of Star Wars. And the first one was The Black Hole, which we've already talked about, and my professed love of that film, which is not a successful Star Wars ripoff, but manages to create its own little alchemy. Now, we're changing it up, looking at Message from Space, a Japanese Star Wars ripoff. Now, the reason why this was chosen over 100 other different Star Wars ripoffs is A, because I saw this film as a kid, and because of the fact that I have grandparents that are Japanese, and fucking loved this movie. Actually loved it so much that I thought it was a fucking Star Wars movie, of all things. Like an actual Star Wars movie, even though there's nothing in this film that is Star Wars, and we'll get to that in a minute. Well, there is, but not really. And also because it's only fitting that the snake would eat itself, where, you know, so much of what Lucas took from was from Japanese samurai movies. I mean, hell, I mean, he named the Jedi after a film movement, the Jedi Geki, which is a samurai picture, or Champara, if you guys know all of that stuff, as you probably should if you're really good film geeks. If you're not, go ahead and take a deep dive into Japanese samurai cinema, and you will be surprised and delighted to see how much fun that can be. But that's not what we're talking about. It's just all preamble to Message from Space, directed by Kenji Fukasaku. And okay, this is not a good movie. We all know this, okay? And those who have seen it, no. But I think that, I mean, this is where we get into this whole thing of, like, I want to be clear, I'm not ironically watching this film. I truly love this film. I have a bunch of affection for it because it is fucking insane. The Toei, who produced this film, just threw a shit ton of money at it, hired hired Vic Morrow. We've already talked about Vic Morrow and his career. You can actually listen to that one by going back in the catalog and looking at 1990s Bronx Warriors, the Bronx Warriors, and even Great White. We covered a couple of his movies, and we've talked about him pretty in depth about, like, you know, as twilight of his career approached, how he moved away from American cinema because, you know, people like the Italians and the Japanese would pay him a boatload of money to star in their films. And he didn't have to do that much work. I mean, I think that they said that he did all of maybe 2 or 3 days of work on Message from Space. And fuck, I mean, it shows. There's only maybe a couple of scenes with him in it. But this movie is so wrong-headed in every way, but I love every second of it. Every decision that they made in this film is just kind of head scratching and just like, if you thought about it too hard, it's going to be headache inducing. But again, I love this film. It is so fucking amazing to watch this movie and just realize this is out there. This exists. This film is more of not a total ripoff of Star Wars. It's more Seven Samurai than anything else, where, well, you could call it Eight Samurais, I guess. The film starts off with this really muddy description about what's going on between these two alien races. And basically, these space walnuts, if we will, are going to determine eight different people that are going to help I guess they're the peaceful alien race. So there's this war going on with the Jalutians and the Gavanans. Now, the Jalutians are the peaceful race, and the Gavanans are the the bad alien race. And basically, the Jalutians have been invaded, and their planet has been taken over, and their planet has been made into essentially Starkiller Base. That's exactly what has happened. And so, instead of taking things into their own hands, they take these space walnuts. These space walnuts are supposed to bring together a group of eight warriors that are going to help them defend the Jalutian's planet and save the day. And so the first I think it's like the first 90 of the 105 minute running time of this film is everybody getting their space walnuts, and the space walnuts glow, and they either accept the call to adventure or they reject it. And so there's a bunch of different people that get these space walnuts, and they range from, you have, of course, Vic Morrow's character, General Garuda. And like, his scenes are just fucking wild because he's partnered up with this robot that is part C-3PO, part R2-D2, called Baby. And his whole thing is like, and there's something lost in the translation, but it appears that he gives up his commission or marches out because Bebe is going to be decommissioned or going to be deactivated. And they're in a bar and they meet the two people that are actually trying to gather everybody with the space walnuts. Again, this is really fucking dream logic. Lots of cocaine and drug use have been made very apparent during this production kind of story. he's kind of like, no, don't want to do it. And so the two people, Princess Emeralda and Yurako, who is like her like manservant warrior, they're the worst people that gather a team together. I mean, they're just fucking horrible because nobody wants to join their team. Essentially, they take off in this spaceship that is literally a pirate clipper ship. And I have to tell you, I fucking love the effects in this movie. They're pretty terrible, but they have some really great models, and there's something about Japanese doing effects work, especially like model work, that just it hits my lizard brain in the right way. I guess it was like as a kid watching all the Godzilla Mothra movies, and just so many miniatures are in those films, or Ultraman, where there's a bunch of miniatures. It just, that particular kind of style of effects work just hits me in the right spot, and I fucking adore it. I mean, even this stuff, it's pretty terrible, but oh my God, is it awesome. It's just, I guess I really love, what I love about that kind of effect is the artifice of it, because it is very apparent. Like, it calls attention to itself, but there's a beauty to it. I mean, even at the worst, at its worst, there is still a beauty to the model making and the motion that they're trying to portray during some of these action scenes. And so, you know, you have certain characters, like there's Shiro and Eren, who are Rough Riders, who are basically like these, like they're supposedly the equivalent of like Luke Skywalker in the movie. There's two of them, along with their along with the like this girl, she's kind of a Princess Leia-esque kind of character, but then also Princess Emeralda is also a sort of Princess Leia type. But they're like these three, Shiro, Eren, and Maya are like a team, and they rescue. They rescue the princess and Yurako, but what ends up happening is that they end up causing a lot of bullshit for the princess and Yurako. And somehow they each, like, some of them get space walnuts too, but Eren doesn't. Eren is played by the very, very, very American Philip Kazanoff. And Shiro is actually played by Hiroyuki Sanada, where Sanada, you would know, he's actually really a really famous Japanese actor. Sanada was actually in Sunshine. He was also the main villain, one of the main villains in The Wolverine. A lot of people know him from The Last Samurai. He's actually a very respected Shakespearean actor. I love the guy. And it was like, it was only in the, I think it was not this viewing, but a viewing before, that I put the one and one together, and I was looking at IMDb and I found out that this was him. It kind of fucking blew my mind, because he's so fucking young. He's just a great actor. And it's kind of fun to see where he started off. And he started literally off here. So they get the princess and Yurako into more trouble than helping them. What's funny is that what I love about like these Star Wars ripoffs a lot of times is how wrong they get certain things. Like, people have complained for literally decades now that Luke Skywalker is just a prissy little Nancy boy who constantly complains about everything, Tashi Station, power converter shit. But they've never seen Luke Skywalker where all he fucking does is complain. And that is literally the equivalent of the Eren character in Message from Space, where all he fucking does is complain and just be this shrill little baby boy that just complains about everything. And I would love to see people watch this and compare it to Luke Skywalker, and I can guarantee you that people will no longer have any complaints about Luke Skywalker if they watch this film and recognize just how fucking insane some people are about, like, that whole thing about him being like him being shrill. Eren from Message from Space is so much more shrill. So the princess and Yurako are like trying to get everybody together, and you have these five who eventually all get space walnuts, but then you also have some additional people that end up coming into the picture. One of them, who happens to be Sonny Chiba, in what I can only describe is like fan-made robot costume or alien costume. I'm serious. You have to see this. Like, I think that Sonny Chiba purposely asked to be put under this mask and or this like helmet thing because he was so embarrassed when he realized the kind of production this was, and he didn't want to really be associated with it. So he wears this the Javans all have like this outfit that's like this kind of knight, like it looks like a suit of armor, and then they're painted, their faces are painted silver, and Sonny Chiba's character in the film is Hans. Yeah, I know, like an alien named Hans, right? Kind of great. But he's the deposed prince of the Javanas. And what his thing is that he feels that Javanan should be a peaceful race and get along with the Jalutians. But he was overthrown by our main bad guy, Noguchi, and his like shrill laughing mother that's in a wheelchair. It's really weird. And all they've done is just gone around and just destroy things. It's really funny because this was made in 78, way before Return of the Jedi, and the dynamic between Noguchi and his mother is very reminiscent of the Emperor and Vader. But Sonny Chiba's character is like joins the group because he wants to not only get back his kingdom but get some vengeance, and eventually they all get their space walnuts, and they all meet up at the planet. Which, okay, so get this, guys. So the planet has been turned into essentially Starkiller Base, but it also can move. So the planet has been moving towards Earth to destroy Earth. Now, why? Because they want money. Now, just go along with this, okay? Now, like, my favorite part is they get to Earth and they want their money. And if they don't get it, bad things are going to happen. They're going to blow up the Earth. Well, time passes. They don't get their money. They don't get their space dollars. And so they decide not to destroy the Earth, but to destroy the moon. They fucking explode the moon. But it has no consequence on anything on Earth. So, like, you know, is it been explained to me if the moon was ever destroyed or it was thrown out of whack, like, you know, it was thrown off of its course? It would be detrimental to the Earth. The Earth would basically, the ecosystem would go hog wild, and we would probably end up in a mass extinction event. Nothing happens like that. It just, the moon blows up and basically it's just fucking done. And it's like, oh, okay, oh, well, you know what? There's no moon, so, you know, there's no, you know, the tides, all that shit. It doesn't matter. Just the moon's blown up. That's what they do. Like, it's almost like they wanted to up the stakes, and they felt like, you know, Star Wars and the Death Star blowing up Alderaan wasn't enough. They needed to get it personal. So they took this planet and took it to Earth to hold, like, you know, it money ransom, and they blow up the moon. Well, at that point, that's when all hell breaks loose. All the action scenes, of course, all of the people, you know, all of our eight members of the Space Walnut tribe are doing various things, and there's cross-cutting between space battles and Sonny Chiba versus versus a space alien with swords that have like kind of cheap lightsaber effects. You also have you know, the Jalutians, rising up and battling against everybody, and then they try to escape, and it's a lot of sound and fury. It's kind of amazing. Not kind of, it's really fucking amazing. But it's so hard to describe because it's this murky water of how they tell the story is so just, like, it's drug fueled. Like, it really honestly feels like it's drug fueled. You watch any and you're just like, huh? And one of my favorite things, and it's going to close out the podcast, is the score. So I am genuinely shocked that John Williams and George Lucas did not sue the fuck out of Toei after they released this film, because the main theme of this film is literally the Princess Leia theme from Star Wars. It literally we have a Vanilla Ice Baby under pressure situation here. It's literally just fucking one note. One fucking note.
We sampled them from him, but it's not the same bass line. Like he goes ding 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 ding. That's the way theirs goes. Ours goes ding 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 ding.
See what I mean? I mean, Jesus Christ, it's fucking there. I mean, I just, wow. Like, it's really shocking to me. But it's a lot of fun. It is a shitload of fun. You can find this through Screen Factory. They actually released a limited run of Blu-rays for this film. I think that they produced 2,000 units. I think it's still available as the time that we're recording this in December. I cannot recommend this fucking movie enough because since getting it, like since watching it, watching it for the podcast, I watched it like 3 times just because it was so just kind of, it's not confusing. It's just, it's really, really, really trippy and just kind of hazy and muddled, and it really does need to be seen to be believed. It's a very bare bones disc. It has like an essay, like an old school Laserdisc essay on it. The transfer is, I mean, it's as good as they're probably gonna get, and I'm pretty sure that Shout Factory is the only one that's ever released this on Blu-ray. I'm pretty sure that Japan doesn't even have this shit on Blu-ray. But it's kind of wonderful, and I definitely recommend it. This one, again, it definitely falls in the rescuism thing because of the fact that, you know, they're trying to rescue this planet, and it's just, there's so much going on in this film in 105 minutes that you're just going to be scratching your head sometimes as to why they're doing certain things. Like, at a certain moment, Vic Morrow starts to quote Don Quixote, kind of, but not. It's pretty wild and pretty amazing, and you really should watch it. Watch it with your favorite libation. I watched it. It was it was definitely a 2-glass whiskey movie where I had one, I had like, you know, 1 and 2 in quick succession, just because it's like one of those movies that it's just a little bit better when you're nice and loosey goosey, kind of like, you know, in that drunky, almost drunky phase, that buzz, that hard buzzed. I mean, I don't normally, you know, that I don't normally recommend this kind of stuff, but it definitely helps with this movie. So we're going to be back next week with another double feature. And this one, I'm very excited. I'm just as excited about talking about this one as I've been about everything else because, it's just a lot of fucking fun. We're going to be looking at both Valerian in 3D and Space Raiders. And we're calling this one Star Wars-ish Cops and Robbers. And because essentially Valerian is a giant, crazy, beautiful, amazing, hard to describe, but easily described, perfect B movie that's essentially a cop movie, a procedural, and Space Raiders, which is essentially a movie about a bunch of thieves. And remember how I was telling you James Horner's coming back? Well, Space Raiders, it's a Corman special, and I'm going to love talking about that as much as I'm going to love talking about the lunacy that is Luc Besson's soon-to-be cult classic, Valerian, in 3D. We're watching it in 3D, which I would highly recommend doing, but you're probably not going to be able to do it unless you have a Region 2 player, because the only two places that have released Valerian in 3D are in either in Asia or in Europe, because fucking America decided not to release it, or Lionsgate decided not to release it on 3D. What the fuck, Lionsgate? Come on, get your shit together. 3D is still going strong in America. We love it here. Come on. I had to go to Region 2. You didn't get my money. Region 2 got my money. But anyways, we're going to be talking about that and Space Raiders. I'm really excited about this, and we might have some few surprises for you during Christmas week. It's all to say, it's going to be some really great content for you guys. Again, I cannot stress this enough, guys. You guys make this possible. Your listenership fuels this podcast, and I always want to just say thank you so much for that, because without you, there's no podcast. I wouldn't be doing it. I'd be doing it, but I'd be talking to the ether. So with that, I just want to say, because of the fact that it's coming up and we're towards the end of the year, and everybody's starting to celebrate, you know, those holiday season holidays. So I don't care what kind of race, denomination you are, gender, I just want to wish you a happy holidays, and a safe holidays, and, you know, be kind to one another. I know that sounds strange coming from me, like I'm always, you know, we're always talking about the film stuff, but do something nice for somebody, unexpectedly nice. That's what the holidays are about. I always try to make it a point. I don't talk about this because charity is not discussed. It's when charity is discussed, it's ego, at least to me. But I always try to make it a point to, give to people in need, or like, you know, give where I can, and just try to be a better human being, during this time, even more so than I try to be during the rest of the year. I mean, I always try to be a better human being. I mean, who wouldn't on this journey that we call life, right? But I know, like, you can always tell me to shut the fuck up or stop the preaching, but I just, you know, try to do something nice for somebody else. And, you know, you'd be surprised at how good it makes you, how good of a feeling you'll have. Love your fellow man and woman, because, yeah, it was a hell of a year, wasn't it? But we'll be back next week. New Year's week, where we're going to be talking about this stuff, or actually it'll be Christmas week while we're talking about these two really great films, that we're again titling Star Wars-ish Cops and Robbers. So until next time, again, the happiest of holidays to you guys, the safest of holidays, whichever ones you decide to celebrate. If you celebrate them all, I'm fucking jealous of you guys, because shit, I'd love to celebrate all of them. But until next time, talk to you soon.